BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening.
Hello and welcome to another BDNG episode in conversation with. My name is Emma Button and I'm the Events Education Lead for the BDNG. Today, the BDNG is in conversation with Rebecca Penzer-Hick and Karen Stevens. Both have a strong interest in the skin and mind connection. They both practice clinically, and we want to discuss today a day that we hosted last year. So, welcome. Please, could I ask you just to introduce yourself? Perhaps, Rebecca, do you want to start?
Yeah, thanks, Emma. So, hello, everyone. I'm Rebecca Penzer-Hick, and I have two jobs, really. As Emma's already mentioned, I work clinically one day a week in an intermediate dermatology service, so a GP with extended role service based in community in Cambridgeshire. And then for the rest of my time, I'm a senior lecturer at the University of Hertfordshire, where we run three skin-related master's programmes, multi-professional master's programmes. And I module lead several of those modules and I'm program lead for the MSc in clinical dermatology. So good to be here. Thanks, Emma.
Thank you. Welcome, Rebecca. And Karen?
Hi, Emma. I'm Karen Stephen, as you've already said. I'm a dermatology specialist nurse working in Scotland in Tayside. I work just part-time now, 2 days a week. So I do some what we call chronic disease clinics, where I see new and return patients with psoriasis, eczema, acne, many of the other long-term conditions that we see regularly in clinic. And also I'm involved in the monitoring of our systemic therapy and biologic patients. So lots of patients that have lived with their conditions for a very long time. And I now work alongside one of our consultants in the hair clinic. So again, lots of long-term conditions.
That's a lot to fit in 2 days, Karen. So you're doing very well. So I guess I first wanted to ask about how did the day come about last year? We obviously had an in-person education day regarding the mind and skin. And I just wanted to talk to you both about how the day came about and how you became involved with this.
Well, I think it was on the background of the fact that we all know the impact that so many skin conditions have on our patients, both physically but and also on their how their mind and their mental well-being is and on their day-to-day impact of life. So it was in partnership with Ego Pharmaceuticals that we recognised there was a need for nurses to develop their knowledge and skills. I think that we're all a bit anxious when we start to think about how are we going to cope with mental health. We're used to looking after the skin, but maybe not so much the mind.
Yeah. Can I just add, I think that the things that Karen has touched on is really important, and just particularly the sort of fear factor that we often have around having those conversations. So one of the things that we really wanted to do that actually Karen did brilliantly on that day was to give people practical skills to help them. So it wasn't just a theory. There was some theory, but it wasn't just a theoretical day. It was the aim was for it was to be very practical and very hands-on so that people got the opportunity to practice some of those, you know, skills, some of those hints and tips about how to communicate, how to address mental health well-being needs.
Fabulous, with the hope that then you could go into clinic and apply some of that. So that's brilliant. And in terms of your background then, Rebecca, why did you become interested in this area particularly of practice? What was it for yourself?
Yeah, I suppose it's as you've been in dermatology for a lot of years, you become increasingly aware of the huge burden that that skin disease can have on mental health well-being, and the need to kind of address that becomes more and more urgent as you become more and more aware of it, you know. And I think as nurses, we have always acknowledged the importance of stress, for example, in developing some of those chronic long-term skin conditions like eczema and psoriasis. But as the years have gone on, and I've been in dermatology since 1990, we've developed a much better understanding of the sort of pathophysiology, if you like, that underpins all of that, which in part has been my interest, in that I'm, as a lecturer, I'm always looking for ways of exploring the evidence that backs up what we see in practice. So, you know, we acknowledge the fact that we're seeing patients who are anxious, who are depressed, who are struggling with low quality of life to live on a day-to-day basis. So it's about supporting that, but it's also for me about understanding some of the altered pathophysiology that underpins all that as well. And so it's kind of a dual thing, really, that reflects my dual role in life. And I do think really strongly that nurses have a really key role to play here. And I suppose that's the other reason why I'm interested in it, because I think as a professional group, we often have more time, perhaps more inclination, to work with our patients and to support our patients around these very difficult issues of mental health well-being, and often have really long-term relationships with patients which allow us to explore those things and help them to develop skills to manage them.
Gosh, yes, I can see the interest on both sides. And I have to say, I've just recently undertaken your course at Hertfordshire, and it was quite insightful. It's very good, actually. So it helps to put the theory behind it into practice. So you understand why you're doing it, and people are asking you to use specific tools, etc. So perhaps, Karen, you very much spoke on the day about tools and things you can use in practice to help with that side of things. Did you want to tell us a bit more about how to do that in clinic?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really where my interest started. It was much more from the practical side that, you know, like Rebecca, I recognised that there was something more we needed to do than just educate people on how to look after their skin, that they needed something else. And I had an opportunity probably 10 years ago or so to do a course which was actually originally developed for cancer care, but it was about how to assess the psychosocial aspects of care. And a colleague and I, Barbara Page, which many of you will know, undertook this course really to see whether we could adapt it for dermatology. But when we did the course, which introduced us to a lot of the tools that I use now, we recognised that actually it didn't matter what was wrong with the patients, whether it was cancer, whether it was dermatology, whether it was, you know, chronic kidney disease. What they were feeling and the struggles and challenges that they were having were all the same. And therefore, the approach was very similar. So we didn't need to adapt the course at all. And in fact, we then shared it with many dermatology nurses across the country. So it was from that practical side that I came into it. And that's definitely how I use things now in clinic. And the tools are really helpful. And particularly if you're coming into psychosocial assessment and mental health and well-being to begin with, the tools give you some support to begin with. You know, a lot of what I do now is about changing my consultation style, but that takes a bit of practice and experience. It's about focusing on open questions, about holding back the need to fix everything, which we want to do as nurses. And we have all this knowledge about the treatments that they should be using and when they should be using and how many times. But the more that we tell people, the less they're likely to do it and the more they will back off. So it's about holding back and letting our patients develop the knowledge and skills themselves, and that you are guiding and supporting them along that way. So that bit takes a lot of practice. But but what you can do is start to use these tools which give you a framework to work with. So the SWIFT tool that we spoke about is a great consultation tool that enables you to start to look differently at a patient consultation, about really taking a holistic history and about finding out what are the pressures that this patient has, looking at them as a whole person and how their well-being is being affected. So that's a really useful tool called the SWIFT checkup. And again, comes from the world of cancer care, but fits very nicely into dermatology. And then you've got the tools much more specific, looking at depression and anxiety, the PHQ-9 and GAD-7. And if you're new to asking these difficult questions, then a tool gives you that way in to open these conversations.
That's all very, very interesting, Karen. And this is 10 years ago that you started to sort of have your interest, because I feel very much at the moment it's a big buzz around mind and skin, and we're becoming more aware and everybody sort of wants to seek training. But it sounds like it's for a long time you've been thinking, right, I need to apply this in practice and find, you know, practical ways to support my patients. You spoke about asking more open-ended questions. Have you seen a more positive result with patients in terms of concordance and in terms of them actually applying their creams and wanting to come back and see you? And has it improved rapport, do you find, rather than saying, you know, this is what I want you to do and I'll see you in 12 weeks? What are the main changes you see between yourself and a patient?
Yeah, I think it does completely change. And patients come back more positive and more confident in what they're doing. And definitely there is much more likelihood that they've done it. Because it's quite well known in the world of motivational interviewing that people are much more likely to do things that they hear themselves saying. So if you say it yourself, you are much, much more likely to do it. So if you're able to come up with, for instance, an emollient plan, you know, instead of us saying, OK, these are your emollients, you need to put on the cream, you know, morning, lunchtime, when you come home from work, and then use your ointment in the evening. That'll work really well. We know that it works really well. People are then starting already, their mind is whizzing, saying, right, okay, how am I going to do that? I mean, is that going to stick to my clothes? And they're already looking at, okay, that's fine, but, and they will make excuses to try and get it in their heads. Whereas if you're saying, okay, we have two different kinds of emollient, we have creams which absorb a bit better, they're nice and cooling on the skin, give them whatever facts they need for their skin condition, and we've got ointments, they're a bit more greasy, you know, have a feel of it, see what you think, but the benefits of it are X, Y, and Z, and then say, how do you think that would fit into your life? Where do you think that it would be practical for you to use that? Then they're coming up with the treatment plan of where and when they can do it. You're there as their guide and to give them your expert knowledge, but it has to be the patient's plan and they have to come up with it. So if you do it that way and ask open questions about how is this going to fit in, how do you feel about that? Then they come back and they've already sorted a lot of it out for themselves. So that's the difference.
So you're very much empowering them, aren't you, in a way, to come to their own decision, you know. And as we know, people research now and they like time to go away and research and come back to you as well. Definitely. So that's all very, very interesting. Are there any particular resources you lean on a lot? So you mentioned the SWIFT. Is it mainly the SWIFT, the PHQ-9, the GAD-7, the DLQI? Are they the main resources or do you have others?
Those would probably be my main ones that I use. There are some tools that I maybe don't use the actual tools, but I've probably used them to influence the way that I approach a consultation. And those would things like looking into the brief illness perception questionnaire, which looks at people's understanding of skin disease. So I think the danger when you go into the world of questionnaires and tools is you can get absolutely lost in them, and then people,
yes,
I get very fed up, you know, filling in questionnaires. So another thing about using these tools is, you know, don't ignore the fact that a patient has taken the time to complete them. You know, the worst thing is for you to fill in a questionnaire and then the nurse or doctor just sticks it on their desk and doesn't look at it. So, you know, if you're asking somebody to fill in some of these tools, then do discuss it with them and look at it as the start of the conversation, not instead of having that conversation. But yeah, the brief illness perception questionnaire is really good at giving you a better understanding of how people feel about illness and how they're going to cope, and how that then influences how they then go forward. So that's a good one. There's also questionnaires about preparing someone for a consultation, and that's about giving them the opportunity before they come in to see you about jotting in what's important to them, you know, what do they want to achieve from a consultation, and that shifts right from the beginning. The patient knows that you're interested in them and what they want to know and how they feel, so that can often shift. So sometimes not necessarily using the actual tools or questionnaires, but looking and understanding where they come from and using that as part of your consultation.
Yes, that's great. And you think you just said some really valid things there as well, and some really important things. And, you know, a patient takes the time, as you said, to fill that questionnaire out. And often I think about where they're filling it out, and perhaps are we going to get the best answers out of our patients if they're sat in a waiting room full of, you know, a mixture of people, they're feeling quite anxious before their appointment. And if they've gone to the trouble of filling it out, it's so important to go through it. And just touching on that, Karen, have you any advice for some of the questions in terms of if they complete a questionnaire and it talks more about, you know, if they've had any suicidal ideation or generally low mood, do you have any sort of open questions you would ask to start that? Because I think a lot of nurses can find that quite difficult in a way. They can see it on the questionnaire and they think, oh gosh, you know, what do I need to do right now? How would you open some of those conversations?
Yes, it is. And I think it's the point that put people off using them when they see that. So I go through all the questionnaires that they hand back, and it's just about picking up and recognizing and being very open and saying, I see that you have ticked that you've had thoughts of harming yourself. Can you tell me a little bit more about what those feelings are? So invite them to expand on it. And the important things around suicidal ideation and self-harm is about, have they got a plan in place? And are they going to be doing this, and what has stopped them from doing it before? So you're looking for is this a fleeting thought that has just passed through their mind, or is this something that they are actually planning? Are they, you know, collecting tablets together? Have they made a plan? Do they know when they're going to do it? You yes. know, and these things are very, very different. So if it's fleeting thoughts and someone has no plan at all, they've got, I would never do it because I couldn't do that to the children, you know, I couldn't leave my dog. What are their things that tether them to not doing that? So you want to find out what those strengths
safety
are.
Safety and their safety There's, factors. Okay.
Absolutely. Yes. So those are the type of questions that you want to do. But I think the important thing is that by discussing these things, that is therapeutic in themselves, and that you are not, by bringing up the subject, you are not going to make someone go forward and actually hurt themselves or commit suicide. So I think that's what people are scared of, that when they discuss it, they might then put the idea in someone's head. You are not going to do that. And the fact that you are raising it and bringing it out into the open, asking them about it, will in itself make them feel better. And you, yeah. before you start to do any of this, you should know where you can signpost people to. What are your safety nets? Who can you go and speak to as a practitioner? And who can you send your patients to? So you need to know what resources are available to you locally.
And I guess that ties in nicely and brings me on to the next question I have for you both, actually. But I'll start with Rebecca. Is in terms of resources that are available and courses, Rebecca, would you be able to tell our audience a little bit more about what they could do to enhance their learning?
Sure. Can I just add a point that came to me when Karen was speaking? Because I think one of the things that I agreed with absolutely everything she said, but one of the additional things that I think is really important for patients is this sense of being, I'm using the word of being held, you know, that that we have their best interests at heart and that we're not going to let them go, inverted commas. You know, we're going to work together to find solutions, and that those solutions may not emerge on the first consultation, even on the second consultation, but that we can continue to support them. And I know not all services have that luxury of being able to see patients on a longer term basis, but ideally that's what, you know, that's what we should be doing, is that this is a long term relationship and it's a long term issue, and we're going to be working with you to find solutions, be those physical solutions to your skin disease or psychosocial support. So that sense that the patient is not going to be just cast adrift again, I think is really, really important, yes. Particularly as it's so difficult for people to access services these days. So yes, resources. So as Emma has already mentioned, at the University of Hertfordshire, one of the modules that we run that is part of our MSc suite of programmes is called Mind and Skin. And within that, we try and help our students to develop both this kind of theoretical understanding of some of the issues around mental health, mental well-being and skin disease, but also some really kind of practical sort of continuing to develop some of the things that that Karen's been talking about in terms of consultation skills, in terms about how to have conversations with patients. That just helps give people a bit more confidence, I think, in developing those skills in a safe environment with other people who are going to be supportive. And alongside that, we learn in a sort of multi-professional way as well. So we're learning with students from overseas, we're learning with people from other healthcare professions. And so you've got this really unique kind of cohort of students together who are learning to develop these skills that hopefully will be really useful when you go back to practice. So I suppose the kind of thing that I would want to emphasize about the modules at UH is that we try and make sure that everything we teach, whilst it's theoretical, it also is extremely practical, so that you're developing your master's level skills, but you're also learning to develop some really useful practical skills for when you go back into practice. So that link is always there. And whilst we have that one specific module on mind and skin, you know, there's a lot of the rest of the modules will incorporate issues around how we help to support the mental health well-being of patients. So it's not always about putting things in boxes and saying, right, well, this is the box that we learn about mental health well-being and mind and skin. It's about making sure that whatever you're learning about, that you're thinking about these issues about mental health well-being and how that relates to your interactions with patients and how that relates to how patients may get better or improve their health.
Yes, that's brilliant. Thank you for sharing that, Rebecca. And it was such a great course as well. And like you said, there are practical elements to it and communication workshops, and it really does get you thinking, you know, about how you want to move forward in your clinical setting.
Yeah, I think that's important, you know, that nothing is ever about a finite endpoint, is it? We're always learning. You know, I just standing here listening to Karen talking this morning, it just makes me think about other things I could do in my practice. So it's there's never an end point. We're always learning, and that's the trick, is to learn how to learn, and to you know, have that open mind that you will always be learning. There's never a final point where you go, right, got it all.
And I guess that leads up, Karen, are you aware of any sort of resources available or where people can access tools?
Yes, there's not very much that I'm aware of up in Scotland, unfortunately, but I'm always very open to hearing if anyone does have anything. There is, of course, the Psychodermatology UK group, which is a special interest group of the BAD, who run an annual course at St John's Dermatology Academy, and that was online the last time I looked. So that's a really good resource, and a good, if it's a topic that you're interested in learning more about, then certainly look into that group. We've obviously got our session that we did last year, which is an on-demand session through the BDNG. And online also, you know, as part of the whole mental health and well-being, once you start to delve in, what we haven't touched on is habit reversal, which has also been around for years and years, but I think becoming much more popular again. And there's a great resource on atopicskindisease.com where there's practical manuals and you can work with your patients through that programme. So that's also a good resource. And of course, the BDNG are developing more resources and e-learning on mental health and wellbeing. And we've got another study day, of course, in November, which I'm sure you were going to mention anyway.
That's finishing off with that, is that we do put plenty of study days on now at the BDNG, and we've increased those. So please don't hesitate to look at the website. And as Karen mentioned, we have another day focusing on psychoderm in November, and the dates and the times and location for that are available online as well. So I think I want to just take the opportunity to say thank you to EGO and to the QV team for supporting this day, this collaboration, to help make it happen. It was a really successful day, and as Karen had said, there's an online in-demand webinar that you can watch of the day, and you just access that via the BDNG website. So Rebecca, Karen, I just want to say thank you so much for supporting the BDNG with this initiative, and I look forward to working with you both in the future on more things that are related to mind and skin.
Thanks very much, Emma.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.